I'm Jeremy Alcock.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, JJ graciously agreed to speak tonight. If you've been around for any bit of time and you've had anything to do with the extension, he was involved in there for, what, 20 years. And I've heard you speak one place. Did you ever speak here before?
No.
Okay, so I've heard him speak one time, and he's very exciting. He's very, very active and continues to be active even after he retires. And he actually made it from Woodstock to here in, what, like 30 minutes?
30 minutes. I still drive like an idiot. Yeah.
There you go. And we're just really glad to have him here, and thanks for coming.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Well, I'm JJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, JJ.
And I'm very happy to be here, and at my age, I'm happy to be anywhere right now. So, I never thought I'd just turn 65 this week, and I never thought I'd live that long. And well, thank you. It is a happy birthday. They're coming faster now.
Yeah.
I've noticed that a year doesn't last but a week anymore. But my sobriety date is June 14th, 1994. I'll be coming up on 21 years this June by the grace of God. And it's been the best 20 years of my life. As was mentioned, I just spent 20 years of my sobriety. I became director of the Extension Recovery Center in Marietta, which is today is a 67-bed rehab for homeless men and women. And it's the same rehab that 20 years ago was a shelter. And I lived in that shelter as a homeless alcoholic a little over 20 years ago. So I owe a great deal of gratitude to that place. I enjoyed my 20 years, and it got too big and too crazy, and I said, it's time to slow down. So I went out and started a little private practice, and now I do a little counseling on the side and work with the courts and play golf and go scuba diving. So life has been very, very good to me. It wasn't always like that. Now, you'll have to excuse me because I don't spend a lot of time in the problem because y'all don't need to know how to be an alcoholic or what an alcoholic is. I think we all are in these rooms because we are alcoholic. So I will qualify myself as an alcoholic, and I would rather qualify myself as a grateful, recovered alcoholic. The big book tells me that I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm still crazy, but I have hope that someday I would become a little more normal. What are you looking there for? You look there. So what I like to do more than dwell on the war stories and the drama of the past is to get into the solution. And what keeps me happy, joyous, and free today and wants me to keep coming back to these meetings when I don't have to go anymore, I want to go now. And the miracles of this program gives us all if we just do a few simple things. But, I refer, and this big book has been around for, this is my original big book, and it looks like it's been around. The answers are not in here. The directions to the answers are in here. The answer to my problem is a power greater than myself. I call him God. I'm not a religious person. I'm not an organized religion, but I try to be as spiritual as I can be in order not to pick up a drink today. The word God works for me. I love dogs. Is dog spelled backwards? I mean, we can play with this any way we want to play with this, but it is a power much greater than myself, similar to the power that alcohol had over me. So I've been always familiar with the power greater than me. I was riding the Jackass in the Kentucky Derby. I had to change horses. So that's what I did. I got on a really fast horse this time and have stayed on it for some period of time. I was born many, many, many years ago in a land far away in Chicago, Illinois, hence no southern accent. Although I have been in Atlanta, Georgia for, oh gosh, how many years? 44 years. I came here when I was 21. But I was already destined to speak this way, so it didn't change a lot. But now it's funny, when I go back to Chicago, I say, where'd you get that accent? I said, what? You got to be putting me on. I've been trying and practicing every day not to get it. And that's no slam to anybody from the South. Obviously, I love it here. I wouldn't have stayed. So, grew up, I left Chicago when we were very young, went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then ended up in Peoria, Illinois, which one of the great vaudeville towns back in the day. And, you know, the old saying was, if it'll play in Peoria, it'll play anywhere. Well, I played in Peoria, and I played a lot. Went to high school there, and started my drink career when I was relatively late bloomer. I was 16 when I had my first drink, and I'll never forget, it was a slow gin fizz. And it's rock gut stuff, but it made me sick, but it made me happy. It did something for me. I was never a big guy, or I was never an athlete. I was always one of these people that was a little self-conscious, and everybody's watching me. Nobody was watching me, but I thought everybody was watching me. Nobody really gave a crap about me. But I thought everybody was watching me, and I felt very insecure. And I found this magic elixir. I said, yeah, I throw up, but I feel good about it. So I started my track. I was on the swimming team back there, and that lasted 2 years because I had to quit that because drinking and swimming, well, it just didn't work well. So I gave up on that, and I got into the drinking group. And I did quite well in that sport. And it's funny because back then, and this whole attitude carried on in my later life, that everybody drank like I did. Well, that's true in the very small group of people that I considered everybody. So if my group did it, then everybody did it. That was my little world. It's kind of like, back in the day when they thought the world was flat. Well, it was in their world. They didn't know about the rest of the world, nor did I. So I was great in my little world of throw up people and getting drunk all the time. And got through high school, barely. Decided I was going to go to college. This was back in 1968, and in the throes of the Vietnam War. So I decided to go to college because the other option was I was going to get drafted. And I said, well, that's stupid. I don't want to get drafted. So I went to college, and I joined a fraternity. And I still hold a record in this fraternity. I was a pledge. I was an active member and an alumni all in one semester. I flunked out of college in one stinking semester. And I'll be doggone that the draft board didn't say, oh, JJ, we got a place for you. I said, oh, no. My first great decision in life. I'm going to be smarter than you. I'm not going to let you draft me in the Army. I'm going to go join the Marine Corps. And I did. And I took three of my buddies, my drinking buddies, with me. And we enlisted in the Marine Corps. They haven't talked to me since we got out of the Marine Corps. I've lost touch with them, and I don't get that. But anyway, that's why I learned how to really drink. I was in the Marines because that's what you got to do to get through the Marines is drink a lot. I never went to Vietnam. They made me an instructor. I taught demolitions and landmine warfare in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I lost a lot of friends over there. And I carried a great deal of guilt because for some reason, why didn't I go? Why not me? Why? And I felt less than. I said, wait a minute, I should have been there. And I didn't see it as a gift from God to do a greater purpose many years later. I just saw it as another thing in my life that made me less than, indifferent than. So finally I got out of the Marine Corps, because we didn't see eye to eye either. And I ended up in sales, which for an alcoholic, an expense account is a wonderful thing. So I got a job, and it was from Peoria into Chicago, and they transferred me to Atlanta, Georgia in 1971. Now, hell, I've never been south of St. Louis, Missouri in my life. And I had all kinds of images of what Georgia was going to be like. And I got here, and it was. Back in 1971 is not like it is today. It was very different. I remember the first time I drove down to Albany. Is that how you say that, Albany? I said, my God. Now, of course, I talked funny to them. And back then, that was dry down there. So you had to join these little clubs or whatever. And as soon as I opened my mouth, they said, no, you can't join. You're not from here, are you? No. So anyway, I didn't do well in South Georgia. But as my drinking continued, I remember one of my first bosses' name back when I was with this company in Atlanta. His name was Tom Collins. I said, How appropriate. I think we're going to do splendid together. And I remember this guy used to get so drunk. I would have to sign his American Express for him. And I told myself back then, I was only 21 years old, already shot out, and I told myself, if I ever get that bad, I'll do something about it. I was already that bad. I just didn't get that bad that early in the night like he did. But as he passed out, I continued and charged it on his tab, of course. But but I knew back then that I did not drink like a normal individual. I got married when I was 22, and I treated that woman terribly, like alcoholics do. It's no fault of hers, and she was the most precious gift that God ever gave me, and I trashed that. We had a child together, and they ended up leaving when he was six, and I became the deadbeat dad, because you know I had to either pay child support or drink, and child support lost. It was many years later that my son and I finally developed a relationship, and I didn't deserve that, but the program of Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me the opportunity to do that. And as I progressed in my disease, I gathered I was never really married. I just had several hostages, and because I was incapable of having a relationship. I was just incapable. And I say that because, you know, I really did think I loved these people, but I really loved my alcohol. And I couldn't be in a relationship with two people. Not to say I couldn't have an affair, but I couldn't be in a relationship with two things at the same time. So my true love was alcohol. And as hard as I tried to be the husband, to be the father, I could only be the drunk. And I ended up in my first rehab living, I got transferred back to Chicago, from Atlanta back to Chicago, and they put me in a place called Hinsdale Sanitarium. This is before they were called treatment centers. They were sanitariums. And I said, well, this is crazy. And they said, yeah, you are. So and I stayed there 32 days and lasted another 6 weeks sober, I think it was. And then I quit ever trying to get clean and sober again for the next 16 years. Never did I darken the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Never did I talk to anyone about my problem, because I could lick this on my own. And I will not go into the great series of tragic events that entailed over those 16 years, but it was ugly. It was real, real ugly, real ugly. I ended up, I think, my third hostage. We had twins together, and very briefly, my little girl died, and my little boy, who is now 23, is legally blind, part and parcel because of the lifestyle and the drinking and the pharmaceutical activities that wifey Pooh and I were involved in. So I carried a great deal of guilt over that at the time, and of course, that's all I needed. You know, my brain, my disease is a living thing, and every living thing needs food to survive and to get stronger. And my disease thrived on a big bowl of self-pity soup. It was its favorite meal. It'd get fat and sassy on that stuff. And I used to give it the biggest bowls I could possibly give it. There was nothing right. I was a lousy piece of garbage. I was useless. I was scum and blah, blah. And I'd just go like this and this and this and this. So my disease was just thrilled with me until I got to that point of absolute demoralization, incomprehensible demoralization, like the big book talks about. And it says incomprehensible demoralization because you can't comprehend it until you're in it. And then, oh, I comprehend this. I get this now. I get this. Yeah, I tried to talk to sponsees that are struggling with this, or people when I was in the treatment program. You know, are you at this point? They don't understand what I'm talking about, because you can't comprehend something that's incomprehensible until you're in the middle of it. Thank you so much. That's not volume, huh? Yeah. Just checking. So, anyway. So those are the things that had to happen in my life to get me to that point of absolute desperation. That was the first gift that God gave me. I took notes, which I never really referred to because I can't read my writing. I don't have my glasses. So, in my pocket, but that's where I'm going to stay. But like I said, I want to get more in a solution than dwell on the problem. You know, I'm qualified to be here. I've got several DUIs. I've got a felony conviction for theft merely to support my alcoholism and my sundry other desires that I had. And although this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I will mention the fact that I truly loved cocaine because it gave me this, I could drink more. I could stay awake longer, and I could drink more. It was fascinating stuff. I just loved this stuff. And I have to say this, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but what I say is my opinion and the way it was for me. But here's the deal. If I could still drink and do cocaine successfully, I'd still be doing it. I loved it. But it no longer did what it used to do. It did for me what I could not do for myself. And then it took everything. And now I'm still left there with the inability to do anything for myself. And I had to find something else other than what drove me down this path. What thought was going to be the great bonus in my life. You know, I'm going to be a very successful cocaine and alcoholic junkie. And because there's a lot of those out there. I know the presidents of the major corporations were doing the same thing I was, right? They just didn't get in trouble with it. No. No. It was me and my delusional way of thinking that thought someday, somehow, I could be successful at this. And my life is just going to be great and I won't have to quit the insanity. But, you know, I got so far into it, I didn't realize it was insanity. It became my reality. It wasn't insanity. It was the truth is the way it is. And I always said, you know, I'll just continue to drink until I get sick of drinking. Because someday that'll happen. I'll just wake up one morning, I'm done with this. I'm full. I can't get any more in me. And I'm done. Well, that was never going to happen. And what I've learned over the years is there's only one thing that motivates me to change. Pain. Pain. Oh, I wish there was a more pleasant way to change, but there's not. I have never quit doing anything that felt good. And I still won't. I won't do it. I'm only going to change when it's too painful to stay the same. And even when it's that painful, I will still think in my mind, say, well, wait a minute. It's not that bad, is it? You know, after your fifth DUI, you say, I'm never going to do that again, but you do. And after you get out of jail, you say, I'm never going to do that again, but you do. And after your fourth divorce attorney, you say, I will never do that again. And I haven't. Woo! It had to stop somewhere, yeah. But oh, Lordy. You know, I say that I've been sober for almost 21 years, but that's not true. I've been abstinent for almost 21 years, but I'm only sober right now. Because I found out really what the word sober means. It's got nothing to do with alcohol. Sober means aware. Sober means present. I'm here. In the moment, I am sober. I'm aware of what's going on. I can only be aware in the moment. I can't be aware yesterday, and I can't be aware tomorrow. I can only be sober right now. And I found another thing, too, that my God only works when I'm sober, when I'm aware, when I'm present. He doesn't care about yesterday. That's my garbage. I'm just going to have to dig through and muddle through that. And he really doesn't care about tomorrow because he ain't there. He's right here. So the only time I have God's grace, which is his daily power, is right now when I'm sober. And I didn't come to that realization until about a year ago. I said, I read this book called Power of Now. And it's a fascinating book. It gets a little heady at the end and a little far out there, but there's some very basic concepts in there that are very, very good. Is all I have is right now, and I'm very blessed to be even able to talk, let alone to a bunch of recovered alcoholics. And it's just an honor to be able to do this. I used to grow up, you know, my ego would say, you know, someday you're going to be a speaker in front of, like, you know, Atlanta Stadium, speaking to the masses and blessing everybody. And here I am standing in front of 30 drunks spilling my guts. And you know what? And it's an honor to do that. But it's just crazy how all of these things happen and how that delusional, egotistical brain just takes you places that don't even exist. What does exist right now is being sober. And in this moment, everything in JJ's world is just ducky. Right now, it might be a mess at 9:05, but right now it's okay. Or 9:05, not 9:05. It's so late, I can't believe you people have meetings at 9:05 at night. You know, at my age, I'm in bed at 9:30. I'm like, geez, I'm going to have to sack in tomorrow. Except I got to do a group in the morning. Oh. But, you know, the older I get, the earlier means I used to go to 8 o'clock meetings. I said, anybody got a 6 I could go to? So I go to 6 o'clock meetings now. But anyway. I think that was important, the realization that I had about sobriety and about living in the moment and really, really enjoying. I don't know if it's because of the time I have in the program, or I think something happens as we get older, we start to really value time because I got a whole lot less time available than I used to. You know, I can see the end easier than I can see the beginning. And so that puts a sense of urgency into trying to grasp the power of the moment, of really enjoying this. And I spent a lifetime spent in the wreckage of the past, and whatever time I didn't spend there, I spent in the wreckage of the future. And that was what it was. It was all wreckage of the future based on what I was doing at the time. So I never really enjoyed the moment because I was never there. I was always there or there. And that's no way to live. That's not living. That's just it's dreaming. It's self-defeating. It's a waste of God's precious gift, which is what I call the present. These are things that, and I don't care how much sober or how much clean time you have, or how long it's been, whatever you want to call it. These epiphanies come up all the time. They say, "Really? I should have learned that a long time ago, but I didn't." And it's funny, the more I can stay focused and aware, the more I can absorb. You ever gone to a meeting? I used to go to meetings. I know early on in recovery, I'd go to meetings and I'd sit there for an hour, but I wasn't there but 30 seconds. I was too busy fixing stuff that I was going to have to do rather than pay attention to that meeting and absorb what I needed to absorb. It's got better over 20 years. I'm there about 25 minutes out of the hour now. So I'm making progress, and I'm okay with that. But it seems to, I get what I need to get and still do whatever I do. But I'm never going to reach perfection, and thank God. Because the journey is the fun part. And sometimes I amuse myself how stupid I can be. After all the years I spent in the business and all the years I spent in recovery, and these little things just hit me like, what? Really? I didn't know that. Like, people expect me to know these things. I'm no rocket scientist. I'm just a drunk. Give me a break. Don't expect much. I'm just a man. I don't know. But I'm sitting here looking at these notes. I can't read them. So we're just going to keep winging it. How's that? No, I got my glasses. It's more fun this way. It really is. I think one of the greatest things I learned when I talk about being sober in the moment, I think one of the greatest things I've learned in recovery is that saying we have in a book, pause when agitated. And I never realized how powerful that was because I never paused over anything. It was bang, zoom. Think, feel, go. And I never really paused. I never really contemplated. I never really did anything but respond to a feeling with a behavior. I just, instant response, just automatic. Of course, my response automatically was to go to what I know best. And when I can pause now, and it's not only about drinking, because my problem is not alcohol. My problem is this thing. This is, you got all the answers? Really? Really. I have no answers. But I think I do. I think I'm right. And what I found out, another thing I found out, and I just shared this in a meeting earlier tonight, is that right is based more on opinion than it is on fact. I'm right. Really? No, your opinion is your opinion, and you'll stake your life on your opinion, but that's not a fact. Right is not factual. It's an attitude rather than a fact. And those kind of little things help me realize that I don't know diddly squat. And I'm enjoying being dumb again. When people say, well, what do you think about this? I say, I don't think. I'd rather not. It's inconvenient, and you aren't going to listen to me anyway, so I don't think. And when that goes around that you don't think, they don't ask your opinion anymore. Don't ask him. He's just dumb. And I like that. I like it. Don't talk to the dumb guy over there. Okay? And so I get to sit there in my own little world, and nobody asks me anything. And when they do, I just respond like it's in the book. Read the book. And I try not to have too many answers anymore. It's just, it's not necessary for me to have answers. It's necessary for me to allow you to find your answers. It was necessary for people to allow me to find my answers. They led me to the book of directions to the answer, and now it is my life journey to build a relationship with the answer. And there is only one answer, and that is God. You know, there were too many things that have happened in my life, both negative and positive, that I can no longer just call coinkydinks, coincidences. Well, that just happens, go figure. No, it's all happened for some sort of bizarre reason that I will never understand. The terrible things, the tragedies that have happened in my life happened because, as much as I hate them, they had to happen. And when things happen, you know, if you talk about acceptance, then, oh my God, I was horrible at acceptance, because if it didn't go my way, I was not about to accept it, because my way was the right way. Nothing else is acceptable. But when I learned how to accept things, I had to accept things. Nowhere in here does it say that you have to like it or even agree with it. It just says you have one of two choices. I can accept it and be at peace, or I can gather the courage and the strength with my daily grace and change what I can change. And somehow or another in there, I have to gather the wisdom of which one I can do. And somebody pointed out to me, it's very simple. Your wisdom is very, very simple. Because I was always one of those things, well, I don't have the wisdom, I can't do nothing. And I said, here's the deal. If it's not about me, my attitude or my behavior, then I can't change it. If it is about my attitude and my behavior, I have the courage and the strength and the power, the new power, to go ahead and change that and look at it different. There's a guy out there by the name of Wayne Dyer. Most of you probably heard of him. And he says one of the most fascinating things to me that I've ever heard. And I've done lectures on this. And this is what I used to teach my guys. And they'd sit there and look at me like... But it's quite simply stated, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. What? Yeah. When I change how I look at something, it appears to change. Has it changed? No, he's still the same jerk. But I've taken a different attitude about it, and I see less jerk now. I can see a different side of this, and that means that the perspective, and that's what this book, the instructions, lead to God, that gives me a different perspective on life and everybody in it. And it's not 100%, because I know some jerks still. But it gives me the ability, when I can pause, to get to that point where I can change the way I look at something. And then it absolutely changes. And that has been so powerful to me. So powerful. It's just a matter of changing an attitude, changing a perspective, looking at the tragedies of my past and saying, okay, they were horrible. But through this process, I've been given the strength to overcome those things and to be the person who I am today. Good, bad, or indifferent, that's who I am today. And I've been blessed to be able to be part of a lot of people's lives in early recovery. And my gosh, I had nothing to do with that. Again, I'm not that smart. I'm not that sharp. I'm not gift. I don't have any more than a high school education. I just went to a whole lot of meetings, and that helps me help others. And people come up to me, they say, and excuse me if I'm just all over the place, because you know, that's what you're dealing with. People got me say, where did you learn all of this stuff about counseling and the brain and recovery? I've been to well over 5,000 AA meetings in over 20 years. And if you want to learn what I do, then you do the same thing. If you want to know what I know, then do what I did. There ain't no college out there that teaches what we learn in these rooms. There is no PhD in recovery. Okay, I'm a drunkologist. a doctor of drunkology. That's where I've got my knowledge, and that's where I got my solutions, and that's what I teach, and that's what I live to the best of my human capacity, you know. There's just so much that this program has to offer. If I just settled for not drinking, what a sorry state of affairs that would be. If this program is just not about not drinking, what a sorry state we would have. What a letdown that would be in my life and all your lives. If that's all I had to look forward to was not drinking, you know, there's, I don't know, 10 gazillion different diseases we can have as human beings. And we got this one, alcoholism. It's a terrible disease. It kills people. It kills them every day. But for every disease out there, if you take the medication the doctor tells you to take, the best you do is get back to where you were. That's the best you can get is, oh, yeah, I feel normal again. The beauty of this disease is not the disease, but to recover from the disease, you not only get to be what you were, you get to be something you've never, ever been. Wow, give me more disease. I love this stuff. They call it a disease? It is, but my God, the recovery from this disease, and I don't dwell on the disease. I don't dwell on the problem. I don't believe in the problem. I believe in the solution. There is nothing that I can face in my life that there is not a spiritual solution to fix it. I honestly believe that. I really believe that. I can sit there and I did, and I think we all did, because we didn't want to admit we were alcoholics. I went to a shrink. I said, there's something wrong with me. I think I'm crazy. And, well, lay down on my couch and let's go through your childhood. And they wanted to keep me on that couch for years and years and years. And I said, well, wait a minute. I can spend, it was back then, it was like $50 a session. I can do this for 3 years. And after 3 years, I'm going to be a lot poorer, and I'm still going to be polishing my problem. Nobody's giving me a solution here. All they want to do is make my problem pretty. Okay. So here, JJ, after 3 years, here's the reason you're an alcoholic. Really? Does that mean I'm not one anymore? Oh, no. No, you're still an alcoholic. Well, then why in the heck did I just waste 3 years to figure out why instead of figuring out what am I going to do because I am? You get me? We spend way too much time. I spent all this time trying to figure out the problem. Like if I figured out why, it would change what I am. I have a disease. I can't wish that away. I can't therapy that away. I can only spiritually address it. It doesn't matter why I am what I am. Knowing what I am with rigorous honesty, finally knowing what I am, I can now enter into the solution, and that is Alcoholics Anonymous. My problem, the more time I spent analyzing my problem, the bigger the problem got. The more time I spent in the solution, the bigger the solution got. And I only got so much room in that cranium. So, you know, as the solution got bigger, the problem got a whole lot smaller. And in many cases, as it says in the big book, it either went away or at least became manageable. There is no problem in my life that I have today that is not manageable. Back in the day, it was overwhelming. It was unmanageable. But today, it's not. It's just not. Life ain't that big of a deal. I ain't as important as I thought I was. I thought I was something. I ain't nothing. And I'm okay with that today. I'm really, you know, when I quit taking myself, what is it, Rule 62, is that the rule? Quit taking yourself so serious, nobody else does. What are you all tight about, you know? Lighten up. God, you're just drunk. Get over it. Well, who in the heck do you think you are? I'm nothing. I'm nothing except what God allows me to be today. And my job is to do the best I can with that gift that I've been given on a daily basis to go out and do what I'm supposed to do. Try and touch a life and try and not screw mine up. You know? Now, there are some days that I'm not what you would call a spiritual giant. I think I shot two people on the way over here tonight. Yeah, they were in my way. Okay, it wasn't very spiritual, but they're in my way. I had to get here. I had important things to do. Don't you know who I think I am? And So, but I can't go to jail for thinking about killing him. I can only go if I do kill him, and I didn't. But I still think that way sometimes. And sometimes the best thing I can do, the best spiritual thing I can do, the only spiritual thing I can do on any given day is just not pick up a drink. But that is sufficient. I'm not a spiritual giant, but I'm sufficiently spiritual today not to have to pick up a drink. And I'm okay with that. Because if I can get by today without picking up a drink, then I have an opportunity tomorrow to work on my spiritual growth. Maybe I'll work on it on the way home tonight, depending on traffic. But that's all I get. That's all this program promises me. It's an opportunity. It doesn't promise me a car, a job, this, that, the other thing. It promises me an opportunity. It allows me to have an opportunity on a daily basis. If I don't pick up a drink, then maybe I can do something of impact in God's world. Maybe I can touch another human life. Maybe I don't go out and commit a crime. Maybe I didn't have to lie to anybody today. Just maybe I had a little better spiritual day today than I had yesterday, and that's all I can hope for. I'm not expounding for all of us to, you know, to be in the priesthood or the priestesshood or whatever hood it is. And you know, I think that we are so blessed to have the simple instructions in this book to be able to finally get out of my own way, to let these things happen so that I can be a benefit to mankind instead of just being a liability. You know, for so many years, there's a theorist out there by the name of Paul Glasser, and he professes this thing called reality therapy. And the basic context of that is living in the now. But he says there's two things that are absolutely essential for any human being to have a fulfilled life. And the first thing that we must have is the ability to love and, more importantly, be loved. And if there's one problem that most alcoholics have, well, there's two problems. I just named them. We don't really know how to love other, well, here, I love you. It's about as deep as that piece of paper. We're superficial and selfish in nature. We mean that, but we are not capable of going to any deeper level than that piece of paper. So, you know, new hostage next week, you got to do it. We are incapable of love. We are even more incapable, or at least this alcoholic was, of being loved. I didn't know how to be loved. I didn't know how to be vulnerable. It scared me to be vulnerable. I have great difficulty in bringing that wall down and being that person that God wants for me to be and be vulnerable. God, that's a scary thing to an all-powerful alcoholic. You know, it's scary to be vulnerable. Somebody can hurt you. Yeah. But there's another thing I learned in life. Unless we take the risk of being vulnerable, we never get to feel what being loved is all about. It's a risk-reward. Risk-reward. But the second thing that Paul Glasser talks about as far as is critical to any human being to be fulfilled, not just to have a sense of purpose or to be worthwhile. I don't know how many times I ask myself in my addiction, why are you here? What is your purpose? Are you a life support system for a bottle of Budweiser? What are you? I mean, you know, you think they're going to go out of business without you? Well, it took a dive, let me tell you that. But they did not go out of business because you all filled the spot. Thank you very much. So, you know, a sense of purpose. Why am I here? And my ego says, well, you know, I've got to be speaking in the dome and talking to throngs of people and be that self-important idiot. That's what my ego says. And my humility tells me, walk softly. Lead by example. Be who you are because that's all you are. And you're fine. You're finally okay just being who you are. Wow, that was a tough one. Finding who you are and being comfortable with it. Because if you're anything like me, and I know you are, the last thing I wanted to be was me. I would have rather been anybody else than me. So I had to alter who I was, not to be anybody else, just not to be me. So to finally get comfortable in my own skin and be able to just, as humbly as I can, walk through life softly, humbly, and to try and touch people's lives as they ask, You know, there was a guy that I think was crucified a couple thousand years ago on this very day. That all he knew was humility. You know, he wasn't driving the big car. Didn't have the nice, you know, this kind of stuff. Didn't have the trophy on his arm. He just walked through the deserts carrying a message of hope, peace, love, and tolerance. By God, I'll tell you what, that guy's the most famous man that ever lived. And he was the most humble man that ever lived. And I say, well, that's not good enough for me. I need all the doodads. You know, I need all the, you're the man, you're the man. Look how many lives you've touched. Oh, my God, we kneel down to you, great JJ. And, you know, I needed the big ego boost, and I needed the big adulation, and that is, that's my disease. That's what got me where I was, is having to try and fill that ego that can never be filled. So as I say those things, and you know, when I was asked to do this, my ego says, well, yeah, they've heard about me. Yeah, I'll do it. I really don't have time, but okay, I'll do it. I'm thrilled to be asked to go anywhere today. But it still comes into play, you know, it still does. It's, ooh, yeah, sure. Put on the time. Go ahead. Make an idiot of yourself. Who cares? But it's a very humbling thing once you get there. And it's funny because those of you who told your story, and if you haven't, please do. It's the most humbling thing you'll ever do in your life. I spent like 3 weeks preparing for this, and I can't even read a note. So, you know, so much for preparation. So much for preparation. And I did that this morning sitting in the office, and I can't read it. It was really good when I did it, though. Oh, yeah, this is good stuff here. So, you know, I had this whole speech prepared, and I was going to dazzle you. No, it's not going to happen. Then I had and I know that there's going to be another speech that I will have on my way home. God, I should have said this. I would have knocked them out. That ain't going to happen either. You ain't going to get that story. So what you got is what's left. A guy that can't read notes, forgot everything he thought about telling you, and well, here I am. And I'm very blessed and fortunate to be here talking to you all. I mean, this is really, this is big boy stuff. This is still, and I've told my story many, many times. Never the same one. I steal from other people and say, put that in mine. And because really, I don't even know my story. You know, I'm sitting. Who are you? It's, I chronologically, I'm 65, but I tell people I'm 45 because there's 20 years of my life. I don't know. I don't know where I was, what I did, who I am. So really, I'm only 45. I just didn't age well. That's my story. I'm sticking with it. So, where are we on time? Because I can go on for a couple of days. Oh, we're getting there, aren't we? Keep going? Yeah. You want more? Let me read my notes. What does that say? Who wrote this garbage? Oh, wait. I referred to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous as a blueprint. It is not the answer. It's just it shows me how to live in the answer, and what the answer is. And I think I'm a simple guy. It's got to be simple because I like to be simple. If it gets complicated, I'll forget it, like I did the whole story. So it says in the 12th step, do we live these principles in all of our affairs? Now, you have to understand that by nature, I'm a lazy person. And that's why I'm a counselor, because you don't have to do nothing, really. Blah, 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 blah. And yeah, you're saved. Goodbye. And so the mere fact that I hate work means when somebody says you got to work the steps, I go, what? And you got to work the steps every day. I say, huh? There's that four-letter word. We aren't buddies. Work and JJ just don't go together. But then somebody told me once, work the steps. And then live these principles in your daily affairs. Well, let's see, live or work? I think I choose to live. So I'm going to live these principles in my daily affairs. And what I have found and what I believe in my deepest part of my heart is if I live these principles to the best of my human ability, it is impossible for me to pick up a drink. I cannot relapse. And who? I don't. If somebody ever told you that relapse is part of recovery, shoot them. That's the biggest lie that treatment programs ever put out there. Relapse is not part of recovery. It is part of the disease. And it is a choice. You don't slip. You slip on banana peels. You don't slip up and get a drink. You make a choice to have a drink. It's part of the disease. And my contention is, if I'm living these principles, then I am in recovery. Because that is what recovery is to me, is living these principles. Not going to meetings, not having a sponsor, although those are very important. That's not the program. The program is living these principles that we have learned through the 12 steps. And if I live those principles, I cannot pick up a drink. In order for me to pick up a drink, I have to violate those principles. First thing I got to do is lie. And the first principle is what? Honesty. So in order for me to pick up a drink, I have to become dishonest. And when I start living outside those principles, there's a liquor store sitting right next to me. So my challenge is not to work the steps on a daily basis. The steps for this alcoholic were designed to teach me how the principle felt. The first step taught me what it feels like to be honest. Because I didn't know I'd done forgot. I done forgot how to be honest. I lied so much I thought the lie was the truth, and it tells me I cannot tell the truth from the lie in the big book. And I couldn't. I really did believe I was 6'2" and blonde hair. I did. Once. And so in order for me to drink, I have to violate the principles. And the first one being honesty, and the rest just fall in line. I have to live unprincipled to drink. And I have to live principled to stay sober. And I choose to live these principles on a daily basis. And that allows me the opportunity to stay clean and sober. It's that simple. It gets too complicated for me to remember, oh my God, I'm thinking about drinking. What step should I do? Oh my God, let me call somebody so I can do a fourth step. What? What? I'm not going to do that. I'll be drunk by the time I find the phone. I'm not going to do that. But if I can remember the principles, you know, I'm feeling a little, well, you're not being honest with yourself. There's something else going on. Let's identify what's going on. Let's live these principles. Let's be service to others. Let's have awareness of God. Let's be sober in the moment. Let's have the integrity, the courage to find out what's going on and have an alternative behavior in mind. If I can live those principles, I can get through any type of crisis that might give me an idea of having a drink and being successful at it. I must live in these principles to the best of my daily or to my human ability. And it doesn't mean I nut it every day. It means I fail miserably. But I do adhere to one principle, and the most important principle, because I cannot live a principled life without the most important principle, and it's the step that the only one you have to do 100%. And that's the first step. I honestly have to know and convince to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and my life is unmanageable. And if I pick up a drink, all that hell comes right back to me. There is no options out there for me anymore. I must remain honest. I may dabble in so many other things. Sometimes I have a little less integrity than others, especially when it comes to filing my income tax. And sometimes I push the limits of being honest on that one. But I do the best I can. But I don't. I really find, to me, the simplicity of that 12 step of living these principles of daily affairs and carrying the message to another alcoholic is the crux of the program. That is That is the whole program put into that 12th step. And we just, we don't give it enough power. I've never seen anybody get drunk over leaving somebody off their four-step or not making an amend in a timely manner. Sure, they'll use those for excuses, and I have too, but that's not what gets us drunk. We forget to live these principles in our daily affairs, and we let the life take over, and we go back to that. I go back to that unprincipled way of living, and I'm drunk. Sure enough, I'm drunk. That hasn't happened in a while. And I'm optimistic I can make it home through Woodstock tonight without picking up a drink. And I'm going to close out. I mentioned the fact that I have a little girl that passed away from my disease and my lifestyle, and my son is legally blind because of this thing. And that created a great deal of havoc, and that was probably the biggest tragedy that ever happened in my life. And I spent another 3 years after that event as drunk as I could possibly be and as messed up as I could possibly be because I just didn't care anymore. The beauty of this program, the power of this program, the power of God, has taken that tragedy in my life and has now turned it into one of my greatest strengths. I can now go over to my little girl's grave over on 41 and Windy Hill Road, and I still go there and I still cry. But I no longer hate God. I no longer hate life. I accept it for what it was, and I accept that the power that it has given me to come on the other side of this thing. And I have to humbly say that because of people like y'all and this program that we have and the God that has worked so hard trying to fix this sorry guy, that I know that my little girl right now is looking down and smiling at all of us as we trudge this road to happy destiny. And I thank you for letting me be here tonight.